Though he was mortally struck, the old bull was still far from death. I would learn just how tenacious of life these magnificent beasts were. But now he charged to meet us once again with a courage and splendour that filled me with reverence. Even in the heat of the hunt and terror for my own safety, I felt shame at the torture we were inflicting on him. Perhaps it was because of this that I let the horses go in very close. Out of respect for him, I wanted to match his courage with my own. When it was almost too late, I swung my horses out of the charge, meaning to pass him just out of reach of that wicked trunk. Just then, the offside wheel of the chariot burst under us. There was that giddy moment as I somersaulted through the air like an acrobat, but this was not the first time I had been thrown, and I had learned to fall like a cat. I rode the shock and let myself roll twice. The earth was soft, and the grass as thick as a mattress. I came up on my feet unhurt and with my wits still all about me. I saw at a glance that Thanos had not come through as well as I had. He was sprawled flat out and unmoving. The horses were up, but anchored by the dead weight of the broken chariot, the bull elephant attacked them. Blade was nearest to him, and he broke my darling mare's back with a single blow of the trunk. Blade went down on her knees screaming, and patience was still linked to her. The bull thrust one thick tusk through Blade's chest and jerked his head up, lifting the kicking and struggling animal high in the air. I should have run then, while the bull was so distracted, but Patience was still unhurt. I could not leave her. The elephant was turning half away from me. His own ears, spread like a ship's sail, blanketed me from his view, and he did not see me run in. I snatched Tunnel's sword from the scabbard on the rack of the capsized chariot and darted to Patience's side. Although the great bull was dragging her along by the leather harness that attached her to Blade, and although the blood from the other horse splashed over her neck and shoulders, she was still unhurt. Of course, she was wild with terror, squealing and kicking out with both back legs, so that she almost cracked my skull as I darted up behind her. I ducked as her hooves flew past my head and grazed my cheek. I hacked at the rawhide tackle that pinned her to the drive shaft of the chariot. The sword was sharp enough to shave the hair from my head, and the leather split under that bright edge. Three hard strokes and Patience was free to run. I snatched at her mane to pull myself up onto her back, but she was so terror-struck that she bounded away before I could get a grip. Her shoulder crashed into me and sent me spinning away. I was thrown heavily to the ground under the side of the wrecked chariot. I struggled up to see Patience dashing off through the grove. She ran with a free and light stride, so I knew she was unhurt. I looked for Thanos next. He lay 10 paces away from the chariot, face down against the earth, and I thought he was dead. But at that moment he raised his head and looked around at me with a bewildered and groggy expression. I knew that at any sudden movement might draw the bull elephant's attention to him, and I willed him to lie still. I dared not utter a sound, for the enraged animal was still standing over me. I looked up at the bull. Poor Blade was impaled upon his tusk, and the rawhide traces were entangled with his trunk. The bull started to move off, dragging the battered chariot with him. He was attempting to dislodge the weight of Blade's dangling carcass from his tusk. The point of the tusk had ripped open the horse's belly, and the stink of the stomach contents mingled with the reek of blood and the elephant's peculiar rank and gamey odour. Stronger than all that, the stench of the sweat of my own fear filled my nostrils. I made sure that the bull's head was still turned away from me before I pushed myself up and ran doubled over to where Thanos lay. "Up! Get up!" I croaked in a hoarse whisper, and I tried to lift him to his feet. But he was a heavy man and still only half-conscious. Desperately I looked back at the bull. He was moving away from us, still dragging the whole tangle of broken equipment and the dead horse with him. I draped Thanos' arm around my neck and put my shoulder into his armpit. With all my strength I managed to lever him to his feet, and he hung against me unsteadily. I swayed under his weight. "Brace up!" I whispered urgently. "The bull will spot us at any moment." I tried to drag Thanos along with me, but he took only one pace before he gave a groan and fell back against me. "My leg!" he grunted. "Can't move. Knee gone. Twisted the cursed thing." The full realization of our predicament struck me then, as it had not before. My old sin of cowardice overwhelmed me once more, and the strength went out of my legs. "Get out of it, you old fool," Thanos grated in my ear. "Leave me. Run for it." The elephant lifted his head and shook it in the same way that a dog shakes the water from its ears after it has swum back to the shore. Those vast leathery ears slapped and rattled against his own shoulders, and Blade's crushed carcass slid off the tusk and was hurled aside as if it were no heavier than a dead rabbit. The strength of the elephant bull was past all belief. If he could toss the weight of a horse and a chariot so easily, what might he do with my own frail body? "Run, for the love of Horus, run, you fool!" Tunnus urged me, and tried to push me away. But some strange obstinacy prevented me from leaving him, and I hung on to his shoulder. Afraid as I was, I could not leave him. The bull had heard the sound of Tunnus' voice, and he swung around with those ears flaring wide open like the mainsail of a fighting galley. He stared full at us, and we were less than 50 paces from him. I did not know then, as I would learn later, that the eyesight of the elephant is so poor that he is almost blind. He relies almost entirely on his hearing and his sense of smell. Only movement attracts him, and if we had stood still, he would not have seen us. "He has seen us," I gasped, and I dragged Tunnus with me, forcing him to hop onto his good leg beside me. The bull saw the movement, and he squealed. I shall never forget that sound. It deafened and stunned me, sending us both reeling so that we staggered together and almost fell. Then the bull charged straight at us. He came with long driving strides, and his ears flapped about his head. Arrows bristled from the great weathered forehead, and blood streamed down his face like tears. Each time he squealed, the lung blood spurted in a cloud from his trunk. As tall as a cliff and as black as death, he came at us in full charge. I could see every seam and crease in the folded skin around his eyes. The lashes of his eyes were thick as those of a beautiful girl, but such a glare of rage shone through them that my heart turned to stone in my chest and weighed down my legs so I could not move. The passage of time seemed to slow down, and I was overcome with a sense of dreamlike unreality. I stood and watched death bear down upon us with a slow and stately deliberation, and could make no move to avoid it. "Tata!" A child's voice rang in my head, and I knew that it was a delusion of my terror. "Tata, I am coming!" In total disbelief, I swung my head away from the vision of death before me. Across the open ground of the grove, a chariot was tearing down towards us at full gallop. The horses were stretched out, and their heads were going like the hammers on a coppersmith's anvil. Their ears were laid back, and their nostrils flared wide open, pink and wet. I could see no driver at the reins. "Get ready, Tata!" Only then did I see the neat little head, barely showing above the dashboard. The reins were gripped in two small fists, the knuckles white with tension. "Mem!" I cried. "Go back! Turn back!" The wind blew his hair out in a cloud behind his head, and the sunlight struck ruby sparks from the thick dark curls. He came on without a pause or check. "I'll thrash the little ruffian for disobeying me," growled Tunnus, as he teetered on one leg. We had both of us forgotten our own danger. "Wah!" Memnon cried, and brought the team down from a full gallop. He wheeled the carriage into such a sharp turn that the inside wheel stopped dead and swiveled on its rim. He had cut in front of the two of us, shielding us for an instant from the charging bull, and as the chariot spun about there was a moment when it was standing still. It was beautifully done. I heaved my shoulder up under Tunnus' armpit and threw him sprawling on the footplate. The very next instant I hurled myself headlong on top of him. As I landed, Memnon gave the horses their heads, and we bounded forward so sharply that I was almost jerked backwards off the platform. But I grabbed at the side panel and steadied myself. "Go, Mem!" I screamed. "For all you're worth! Hi up!" Memnon screamed. "Ya, ya, ya, ya!" The chariot careered away with the frightened horses driven to full flight by the enraged squeals of the charging bull close behind. All three of us stared back over the tailboard. The head of the bull hung over us, seeming to fill all my vision. The trunk reached out for us so close that each time the bull squealed, the blood cloud sprayed over us and speckled our upturned faces, so that we looked like the victims of some horrible plague. We could not draw clear of his rush, and he was unable to overtake us. Matched in speed, we went racing through the glade with the great bloody head hanging over us as we cowered on the floorboards of the bouncing chariot. It needed only one small mistake from our driver to send us into a hole or rip our wheels off against a stump of a fallen tree, and the bull would have been upon us in an instant. But the prince handled the traces like a veteran, picking his route through the grove with a cool hand and practiced eye. He sent the chariot careening through the turns on one wheel, within an ace of capsizing, holding off the bull's mad charge. He never faltered once, and then suddenly it was all over. One of the arrows buried in the bull's chest had worked itself in deeper and sliced open the heart. The elephant opened his mouth wide, and a flood of bright blood shot up through his throat, and he died in his tracks. His legs went out from under him, and he came down with a crash that jarred the earth under us, and lay upon his side with one long curved tusk thrust up in the air, as if in a last defiant and regal gesture. Memnon pulled in the horses, and Tanos and I stumbled down out of the carriage and stood together staring back at that mountainous carcass. Tanos clung to the side of the chariot to favour his damaged leg, and slowly turned back to look at the boy, who did not know he was his father. "By Horus, I have known some brave men in my time, but none of them better than you, lad," he said simply. And then he lifted Memnon into his arms and hugged him to his chest. I did not see much more of it, for those everlasting and tedious tears of mine blotted out my vision. Even though I knew myself for a sentimental fool, I could not staunch them. I had waited too long to see this happen, to watch the father embrace his son. I only managed to regain control of my errant emotions when I heard the faint sound of distant cheers. What none of us had realized was that the chase had taken place in full view of the fleet. The breath of Horus lay close in against the bank of the Nile, and I could see the slim figure of the queen upon the high poop. Even at this distance, her face looked pale and her expression set. The gold of valour is the warrior's prize, higher in honour and in esteem than the gold of praise. It is only ever worn by heroes. We gathered on the deck of the galley, those closest to the queen and the commanders of all the divisions of her army. Stacked against the mast, the tusks of the elephants were on display like the spoils of war, and the officers wore all their regimental finery. The standard-bearers stood to attention behind the throne, and the trumpeters blew a fanfare as the prince knelt before the queen. "My beloved subjects," the queen spoke out clearly, "noble officers of my council, generals and officers of my army, I commend to you the crown prince Memnon, who has found favour in my sight and in the sight of you all." She smiled down on the 11-year-old boy, who was being treated like a victorious general. "For his courageous conduct in the field, I command that he be received into the regiment of the Blue Crocodile Guards with the rank of subaltern of the second class, and I bestow upon him the gold of valour, that he may wear it with pride and distinction." The chain had been especially forged by the royal goldsmiths to fit the neck of a boy of Memnon's age, but with my own hands I had sculpted the tiny golden elephant that was suspended from the chain. It was perfect in every detail, a miniature masterpiece with garnet chips for eyes and real ivory tusks. It looked well as it hung against the smooth, unblemished skin of the prince's chest. I felt my tears coming on again, as the men cheered my beautiful prince, but I fought them back with an effort. I was not the only one who was wallowing in sentiment like a warthog in a mud bath. Even Kratos and Remrin and Astes, for all their hard-bitten and cavalier attitudes, which they usually cultivated so assiduously, were grinning like idiots, and I swear I saw more than one pair of wet eyes in their ranks. In the same way as his parents, the boy had a way with the affections and loyalties of men. Every officer of the Blues came forward at the end to salute the prince and embrace him gravely as a comrade in arms. That evening, as we drove together along the bank of the Nile in the sunset, Memnon suddenly reined in the horses and turned to me. "I have been called to my regiment. I am a soldier at last, so you must make me my own bow now, Tata." "I will make you the finest bow that any archer has ever drawn," I promised. He considered me gravely for a while, and then he sighed. "Thank you, Tata. I think this is the happiest day of all my life." The way he said it made 11 years seem like a hoary old age. The next day, after the fleet had moored for the night, I went to look for the prince and found him alone upon the bank, in a spot that was hidden from casual observation. He had not seen me, so I could observe him for a while. He was stark naked. Despite my warnings about currents and crocodiles, it was obvious that he'd been swimming in the river, for his hair was sopping wet upon his shoulders. However, I was puzzled by his behaviour, for he had selected two large round stones from the beach, and was holding one of these in each hand, raising and lowering them in some strange ritual. "Tata, you are spying on me," he said suddenly, without turning his head. "Do you want something from me?" "I want to know what you're doing with those stones. Are you worshipping some strange new Kushite god?"
"I am making my arms strong so that I can draw my new bow. I wanted to have a full draw weight. You are not to fob me off with another toy, Tata, do you hear?"